Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Hey, it's your favorite sports talk show in the DMV, The Sports Junkies.
We're talking DC sports and having fun, chopping it up every day on the radio.
You can hear us every morning on 106.7 The Fan.
But did you know our show is also a podcast?
You get every episode, every hour, and every single highlight on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
And whenever works for you.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search The Sports Junkies, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Good Thursday afternoon. Welcome into Grant and Danny on The Fan. We got a great show planned for you today. In an hour, Dan Lust, who covers sports law, joins us to talk about the investigations and the suspensions that now loom, the arrests that are now pending at this point, the FBI raiding homes this morning of NBA coaches and players. We will talk about that coming up in 1 hour. In 2 hours at 4 o'clock, ahead of the Beltway Blitz, we're giving away Caps tickets. We'll talk college football today at 5 with Danny Cannell. All coming up on Grant and Danny here on The Fan. What's up, Daniel?
Dude, how wild is this story? So the... You know, not to be dismissive of this, because it's serious, obviously. You got an FBI investigation, all alleged, whatever I have to say. The thing that I've seen or thought was inevitable is in a grind-type season in baseball, basketball, hockey, potentially. Like, Grant, you know, if you go 0-for-4 with 3 strikeouts, it's lost in the sauce. No one cares. No one pays attention. You could bet the under that day and make something. Basketball, you come down wrong in the first 5 minutes, roll your ankle. You know, the under could hit. That's something that no one would ever pay attention to. I always thought that was kind of inevitable once Pandora's box was open. This Chauncey Billups part of it, that angle, oh my God. Again, allegedly. Wow.
Did you ever see the movie Molly's Game?
Yes.
That's all I could think about.
Yeah, that's all I thought of.
Reading all these stories was Jessica Chastain, but Chauncey Billups is Jessica Chastain, I guess. Allegedly, or whatever. But it's Chauncey's game.
Chauncey's game.
I want the movie right here, right now. Who plays Chauncey Billups? Who's at the press conference today is Cash Patel. Like, I want the entire film. I guess that's the culminating scene. But yeah, we're going to get a lot of intel on this from Dan Lust coming up at 3 o'clock. But when you read some of the details and when you hear about these technologies and these things you don't even know exists that are straight out of some Mission Impossible movie or something, X-ray machines built into tables to read face-down cards, contact lenses and glasses that read pre-marked cards, secret cameras and card trays. How can you not assume that this thing's going to be a movie really, really soon? Takes a little time to, you know, get it together, but I'll be there in 2030 when it hits theaters.
It sounds like science fiction. It sounds like, no, sci-fi is not the right thing. It does sound Mission Impossible-y, right? Where you go, they used X-ray vision and hidden cameras inside that. Yeah, okay. And I bet you Tom Cruise just pulls his face off and he's not actually the Russian general. It's just Tom Cruise running through a building. Like, I'm sure. But that's what it sounds like. Again, allegedly. But good heavens.
Pretty amazing, man. Speaking of basketball, the Wizards tipped off their season last night. They lost. But more importantly, the kid looked really good. Trey Johnson can straight up shoot it. He scored 16 in his debut last night. Had a couple of threes in short order. Hit 4 in the game. There was a lot to like about his performance. We'll talk about that a little bit later on in the show. Big moment for me on the home front today.
Oh, go on.
So, my kid goes to school Monday, Wednesday, Friday. He's not old enough yet to go 5 days a week. Tuesdays, Thursdays, he hangs out at the house, and that means I get some extra time with him in the morning. So, generally, that means we play hockey in the basement or football outside or whatever he wants to do. So, he's had this thing where we're playing hockey, and oftentimes he has the lead. Like, you know, if not, he's going to cry about it. But every now and then, you keep him honest with a win.
Right.
For the most part, you just...
You got to pick and choose your spots there.
I know this is fitting based on the conversation. You throw the game a little bit. You know what I'm saying?
Is there any chance to wager on this? I got some inside info.
Grant Rogier over here. That's right. Allegedly.
Allegedly.
But I've been trying to teach him a lesson because he's challenging me to a lot of fights in these games. I taught him that in hockey, you could challenge someone to a fight. If they're willing to accept, you both drop your sticks and your gloves and you go at it. And so he just loves to challenge me to these fights. And then we wrestle right there in the middle of the game. But whenever he does that with a lead, I purposefully come back and beat him. And I tell him, you can't challenge people to fights when you're up in the game with all the momentum. It doesn't make any sense. So every time I've ever challenged him to a fight when he's in the lead, Danny, he says yes. Every time. And I always reprimand him after I beat him up and tell him, you know, here's what went wrong, bud. And then I come back to beat him in the game. Today, he's up 5-2. I challenge him to a fight. He goes to drop his stick, and he stops himself and goes, I don't want to lose my momentum. Parenting!
Wow.
Father of the year stuff.
Wow.
Shtick aside, it was one of my proudest moments.
Because he clearly has the momentum. He recognizes that fact.
Isn't that incredible?
That's awesome.
I was so psyched.
I don't want to lose my momentum.
That's what he said. 4 years old, he goes, I don't want to lose my momentum.
Can he say the word momentum?
Absolutely.
Like, that's pretty incredible.
I mean, he's about to be five. Like, that's not the craziest part of that story.
I know, but it's on the podium to me. Right. I mean, like, because I've heard some workarounds on that words like that. That's awesome.
Isn't that pretty good?
Yeah. So he's like, I don't want to give you a face wash, Dad.
Yeah, exactly.
I got momentum.
So I said, come on, man. I'm trying to fight you right now. No, I got too much momentum. And he just went and scored a goal. And I was like, all right, now I really got to let him win to reinforce that he did the right thing. To reinforce, because then if I come back to beat him, he takes the fight, right?
Yeah, I was told this is what was supposed to happen. There's a correlation.
Anyway, thought that was awesome. Commanders getting ready for the Chiefs. We have heard from Dan Quinn today. We will hear from Marcus Mariota today as he gets ready to make the start. The team made it official. They ruled out Jaden Daniels formally and announced that Mariota gets the call against the Chiefs. Starting with that matchup, I think we can have a bigger conversation about the rest of this season now. Here's where I wanted to begin on the phone lines with you today, Danny. What is the ceiling and the floor the rest of the way? I'm thinking records, honestly. I'm looking for, you know, what you think the best case scenario is for them to finish. What is the worst case? How could this go excellent? What does that look like? How could this go terrible? What does that look like? But you're going into the gauntlet. You got three where you'll be pretty legit underdogs, I would imagine. Kansas City on the road and then Seattle and Detroit at home. Seattle was the weakest of the three teams off of a bye with the extra rest. So we're all hoping they can win a game in that stretch. If they won two, that's a massive deal. But what is the best case, the worst case scenario the rest of the way?
Worst case, this could be a 6-11 team. If you don't win any of the next three, you're now staring down the barrel of 3-7.
Math to get to 6-11 at that point?
Then you'd have to go 3-4. Which
final seven would be twice against the Eagles. Dallas at home on Christmas, which, by the way, that game looked so much more fun.
Didn't it?
Before the last Dallas game that we just saw. You got the Giants, man, out of division. Vikings, Broncos, Dolphins.
Dolphins.
So I'm looking at one clock it win, as the kids say. Clock it. One of those.
Yes.
That's it.
So if you go 0-3 through this gauntlet here, which, by the way, is not crazy. A lot of good teams might go 0-3. Right, I'm not talking about great teams. Great teams would win one or two of these games and find a way to compete. But if you're just okay, you could lose all three of these games to three of the five or six best teams that we have in the sport. You're 3-7. From then on, you could absolutely go 3-4. You win a game you're supposed to. You win one maybe you're not supposed to. You may be underdogs at Minnesota, who I think might be fighting for a playoff spot if McCarthy comes back. And that defense can be a pain in the butt.
Tonight could have something to do with that.
Indeed.
Thursday night football, they've got the Chargers this evening. But they need a win big time.
They do, 100%. So I think that's legitimately the worst case. I don't see this as a picking third type team. As bad as it's been, and it has been bad, with Samuel, with McLaurin, Jaden Daniels being able to play at least some modicum of what he was last year, hopefully healthy for a decent amount of time. There's too much magic there. There's too much good for them to go, you know, worse than that, to go 2-8 down the stretch or something crazy and finish with 4 or 5 wins. I just don't see that. The bottom falling out to me is still just regular, hey, this didn't go according to the plan. This is bad. We can retool and be back and be frisky next year. The best case scenario to me is 9-8. That's a 6-4 mark down the stretch. Here's how I got there. You win one of the next three. Okay, that's kind of what I'm banking, hoping for, counting on. You'll be underdogs in all three, and you should be, but you win one of those next three games. whether it's a revenge match that Detroit's so focused on revenge, you beat them, or Seattle doesn't travel east well, even though it's after a bye, something. You go 1-2 in the next few. So now that puts you at 4-6. You bank Miami. Hopefully you get the Jets again. You split with Philadelphia. Dallas, maybe a revenge game. Who knows? But you find a way to win some of these games where it's more coin toss, more 50-50. And I think you can end up with 6 right there and be 9-8.
Yeah, so 9-8 is absolutely on the table for me. My question is, can I find them a 10th win? Which would mean 7-3 the rest of the way. I think that's very unlikely. Very, very unlikely. But if we're talking best case scenario, let's just say they only win one of the next 3, because I think anything else is unrealistic. We're trying to be realistic about this.
Right.
Obviously, they could go on a 5-game winning streak, and now everything looks way different.
Yeah, well, the best case is what? They have 10 games left? They're 10-0. That's exactly. The best case. Like, come on. We're talking real things.
All right, so 1-2. Then you beat Miami 2-2. The Broncos just lost, almost lost, I should say, just nearly and should have lost to the Giants. Had no points through 3 quarters. That's a game at your place. It's not like you're going to Denver. They're very, very different on the road, I would imagine, too. So I'm going to say you find a way to win that game for my hypothetical of reasonable things that could happen. And now I've got you at 3-2 in your next 5. Then you're at Minnesota for a pick'em type game. You win that one, you're 4-2. Now I get you beat the Giants 5-2. You lose to the Eagles, and you beat the Cowboys and beat the Eagles. You're splitting with Philly. I just found you your 7 wins. That wasn't that crazy. Now, the hardest part is there's no letdown games there. You lose the games that you probably should. You win all the games that you should. And a bunch of the toss-ups. It's like election style where I say, all right, these are the states, your stronghold, where you have to win these states. And then you have to win every single state that's up for grabs. And if you do that, here's your map. You just got to 10-7. Here's the problem, though. As much of a stretch as it is to even get them there with what I just did, 10-7 probably doesn't get you in. Because you lose almost every tiebreaker, likely.
Mm-hmm.
You almost have to get to 11-6. So already this season, we're at a point where they've probably got to go on a crazy run that doesn't look feasible on paper. Like, we've already reached that. And you're hoping to get a bunch of help. I guess it's possible at 10-7, if they get a ton of help, that it could work out. But at 1-4 in the NFC right now, with head-to-head losses to wild card hopefuls, Green Bay, Chicago, Dallas, and Atlanta. As of this moment, Danny, 10 wins probably doesn't do it.
Yeah, you'd be Seattle from last year, outside looking in, losing a tiebreaker. So hear me out on this. If you're 1-2 over the next 3 games, if one of those wins is either Seattle or Detroit, okay, that's now you're not good in the NFC, but you're 2-5 in the NFC, right? You beat Minnesota 3-5. Giants 4-5. Philly, Dallas, and then Philly again. That's a possibility then of being 7-5.
You're saying running the table in the conference.
That's the best you could do.
With a sweep of the Eagles.
If that's the case. I don't believe that's going to happen. So call that 2 out of 3. That's 6-6. That's not as horrendous as they are right now, which
sure.
is obvious.
But 2 things. One, I don't think the path that you just laid out, while it's what we're doing in the exercise, is, I wouldn't consider that like plausible.
Oh, I don't either.
Yeah, but I'm saying if we're looking for realistic, you're saying here's what you've got to do. And yes, if they do that thing that you just said, even still, you just said 6-6. I don't think 6-6 in the NFC is a good tiebreaker metric. You probably still lose out there, don't you?
You probably would.
I wonder,
because if you get the 10 wins that way, where you lose all your remaining AFC games to, well, because that included Miami losing. Yeah, so, it's dire.
All right, looking at it last year, the 2024 conference standings. Who would have been the last team in, and what was their NFC record?
Yeah, Seattle was 10-7. I don't know what their NFC record is.
And they missed out by a tiebreaker. I'll bet you that team was over 500 that won the tiebreaker. I doubt they were 500 in the conference, but we could look that up. But that's kind of my point, though, as you look at this thing. So here's my other question, and we can open up the phones on this at 800-636-1067, 800-636-1067. How many wins do you see on this schedule? Do you have more than one? I'm giving you the Miami game as a put that in pen, you're beating the Dolphins game. I know. Any given Sunday, they could beat Washington. You could save your breath. I get it. I'm not saying that any game is a lock. But by the standards of, they're probably going to win that game. As quirky as traveling to Madrid is, and it's not a real game in the States or anything. That's one that I'm going to put in pen and say you win that game. I'm not even willing to do that at the Giants. You never play well at the Meadowlands. They're a better team than they were in week one. I think Jackson Dart is a gigantic pain to defend. I don't have another game here. If we're doing the Grant and Danny exercise of three different categories, Washington will win, Washington will lose, or toss up. I have one game in the Washington will win file. Doesn't mean they're not going to win another five, six, seven games, hopefully. But the other ones are either the toss-up category or the I don't like your chances category. That's the Chiefs, the Seahawks, the Lions, whatever. Do you have any more than the Dolphins game and the Washington's going to win that game file?
No, unless something dramatic happens with an injury or a quarterback or something.
I mean, their schedule is brutal.
It's brutal, yeah. You missed your window for the quote-unquote easier games. Just looked it up, by the way. Seattle, 6-6 last year in the NFC.
And missed.
They're at 10-7.
Yeah.
There you go.
And it might have been head-to-head in there, too. But, yeah, that tells you that a team that was 10-7 last year in the NFC, that didn't handle their head-to-head tiebreakers, and had a 500 record, which is, we're saying, kind of best-case scenario for Washington's outlook the rest of the way, didn't get in. The better chance they might have, oddly, is in the division.
Is the division.
Because you play the Eagles twice. Theoretically, you could beat them a couple times. That got a little bit harder looking, though, after the Eagles came out of their mini-bye, the Thursday night game against the Giants with a little extra rest, and got right on offense. That was the first time all season, in my opinion, that Eagles offense has looked scary, capable of moving the ball quickly or putting up big points, explosive in the passing game. That was the first time now in 7 weeks that they looked like that. And you go, uh-oh. They're a little bit of like a Chiefs NFC where there's this inevitability to them, where we like to bury them and say they're dead and done, but they really never are.
That's been my talking point about them for a while now, and you're starting to see it, to your point. Oh, that's right, A.J. Brown's incredible. Oh, that's right, Devontae Smith's incredible, too. And now that they got options, you got to cover that, and I bet you Saquon Barkley has a couple nicer weeks than he's had to this point. Yeah, but they got the Giants, then the bye week. They could very easily be 6-2. They got a pretty arduous schedule shortly after that, at Green Bay, Detroit, divisional game against Dallas, who gave them a good fight all the way back early in the season. But there's still a couple of gimmies in there, too. I mean, the Raiders, the who knows how healthy the Chargers are going to be at that point. You could easily see Philadelphia being at 12, 13 wins again.
We talked about this a lot last week, but the chances of Washington making the playoffs had they have lost to the Cowboys, which ended up happening. You guys may remember the game on Sunday. They were going to go from being 56% likely to get into the playoffs with a win to something around, I think it was like 25%, 23% likely with a loss, which is where they are now. And I wonder what those numbers look like if you lose again to the Chiefs. Maybe they're down to 14% or something minuscule like that. But I bring this up to say, you can figure out why it's so low when you start to do this exercise. And you start to do the math on wins plus tiebreakers. It's just not a good resume at this point. And really, the only thing they can do is string together a bunch of wins. No one's going to give me a chance to. And now you look up, and after you win four in a row, the math is very, very different. We just said you couldn't do it, and then you did. 2012, 2005, 2007, 2015. Like, we have seen this around these parts with flawed teams that get hot. But you just heard us going through the exercise. We want to take your calls on this next. We're looking for records, but you could kind of go anecdotal if you want to with what it would look like non-statistically as well. At 800-636-1067. The question is, what's the best and worst case scenario for this team this season as we sit here going into week 8? 800-636-1067 is how you can join us on Grant and Danny. You're listening to The Fan.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5.
I know where I'm going to bet from now on.
Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Hey, it's your favorite sports talk show in the DMV, the Sports Junkies.
We're talking DC sports and having fun, chopping it up every day on the radio.
You can hear us every morning on 106.7 The Fan.
But did you know our show is also a podcast?
can get every episode, every hour, and every single highlight on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
And whenever works for you.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search the Sports Junkies, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
G&D on the Fan. You can call us now. You want to hop in on the Commanders at 800-636-1067. You can tweet us at Grant H. Paulson at Funny Danny. The question at hand, what's the best and worst case scenario for the remainder of this season? You had them as good as 9-8, as bad as 6-11. My scale's pretty comparable, but I went best case scenario, I could see them getting to 10-7, but even then, I don't think you get the wild card. Worst case scenario, I have them, I might even go a little lower than you. I don't think they go 5-12. I think that's very, very unrealistic. But if they continue to have these injury problems, there is a path to... The other thing is, like, if you're out of it come December, then maybe you play down. Maybe guys just aren't playing at the same level. Then all of a sudden, it's just a lost season. Maybe they decide they're going to shut one or two guys down because they don't want to you know, continue to risk them when the year is lost or whatever. So if it goes badly for the next 3-4 weeks and your 3-4 becomes 3-7 or you know, 3-8 or something somehow, well, now all of a sudden everything's on the table in that regard. But I think it's probably going to be somewhere between, you know, 7-9 wins, 8-9 wins, which is obviously a big disappointment from where we all were coming into the season.
So remember, the trade deadline is the 4th of November. So sort of kind of awkwardly timed because it's after week 9, but, you know, shortly before week 10. So hear me out on this. I was thinking of how do I get to your path to your worst case, right? You drop these next two games and look non-competitive doing so. Then maybe you go, you know what? We miscalculated. We thought, you know, we did a short-term fix last year. It worked so well. It's a reasonable idea to kind of stay the course. Old guys, one-year deals, et cetera. It didn't work. Hey, you know, good college try. We need to restock the cabin a little bit. We got to get younger. We got to get faster. We got to get more athletic. We need to recoup some draft picks. Now we ship Deron Payne. Now we get what we can for fill-in-the-blank player, a guy that, you know, maybe not here for the long term. Then you definitely get worse in the short term that way too, right?
So there's the juxtaposition of should and will. Yeah, they should do that.
I don't see them doing that.
They're not doing that.
Even if they're not competitive the next 2 weeks?
I don't think so, no. And here's why. It's not even because, like, oh, it's not like Peters isn't going to do that. That's just not the reality of the league. It has trended slightly in that direction.
And you got to be way out of it.
But nobody does that. And every year, it's like people forget that. And we talk about the NFL like it's Major League Baseball, where everybody's a buyer, or everybody's a seller. If you're a seller, you blow it completely up, and you trade everything that's not bolted down. And it's just not the way this league operates. I don't know why. I've never really understood why it's different, but it is. And there's not really a precedent for that. Teams don't just trade off all of their pieces when they're bad. I think they should, by the way. Like the Raiders, as an example, Danny, have told Max Crosby that he is not going anywhere. Now, for a second, let's just not worry about whether they should trade him or not, or whether they're close enough that next year you could still have this great player on the roster, right? Crosby, who led the NFL in tackles for loss 2 of the last 3 seasons, who, if you look at his sack resume, not what you would have anticipated probably, but has had a dozen sacks in 2 of the last 3 years as well. He's never had a 15-sack season, but he is a game-changing
presence. Watch him, you know that guy's impossible to deal with.
He is a harassing, angry, awesome defender. He's 28 years old. He should absolutely be the type of guy that a terrible team like the Raiders trades at the deadline. It's like having a valuable elite closing commodity in Major League Baseball when you're uncompetitive. You flip that piece and you get, in the case of football, I would prioritize draft picks. And where teams are getting smarter now too, in a vacuum, a 5th round pick does nothing for you. You know, 4th round, 6th round pick, whatever. But when you have a ton of picks that you could turn into one higher round pick. It's like a basketball thing. Get 5 second rounders. Why are you going to do that? Because eventually 5 second rounders can either help you in other deals or they become a really late first rounder because someone else wants all the second rounders so they can do their maneuvering so that they can put them in other trades as sweeteners. And so, yeah, that's exactly what teams should do, but they don't. So the Raiders are saying to Max Crosby, their four-time Pro Bowler, hey, man, don't worry. You're not going anywhere. We're not trading you. And they're already telling him this on October 23rd. Why? That's not the way the league should operate, but it does.
Yeah, it does. I mean, because there's enough times it's that danger that, you know, the Atlanta Hawks or the Wizards for so many years would fall into. It's like, oh, we're just a quick little streak away from being in the postseason, and then we get a little, oh, then anything can happen. It's a fool's errand, but it happens just enough times with just enough frequency in the NFL. I mean, the Washington is evidence of that, right? Every 6 or 8 years, a magical run occurs where the team isn't really very good, but, you know, Todd Collins does it or somebody else, and you know, you get in there and you're cannon fodder for a real team, but you went on that run, and that run is so exciting, and people really believe that all we need is, you know, the team we put together. We need a couple of breaks, and that'll happen to us too. So there's a naivete there where, to me, I would be super cutthroat. Like, the instant it looks like this, I get 2 more weeks, and I am racking up my long-distance bill.
So they have 2 games, you said, until the deadline.
Yeah.
So that's the Chiefs, where they're 12-point dogs.
And the Seahawks.
And the Seahawks, where I haven't looked at a look-ahead line, but what would you guess? Right now, I would think, before you play the Chiefs, you're probably going to be 4.5-point dogs.
I would have said 4.5, 5.5.
At home, I guess that's possible. I was thinking 3.5, 4.5. But it's going to be what you're saying after the Chiefs game, if it's not already. So regardless, yeah, let's say you go 0-2. The better conversation is not will they, because they probably won't. Should they trade pieces? I'm not even convinced the answer is yes, but I could get there for sure. Again, I would be, you just said cutthroat, I would be that type of executive. You're in or you're out. You're wet or you're dry. Can I win a Super Bowl with this group or not? I'm immensely flawed. The magical carpet ride's not helping 2 years, happening 2 years in a row. I'm not getting helped by, you know, a lightning strike again. So yeah, I probably would, and I think they probably should. But I'll bet you if we talk to Adam Peters, he could make a case to say, the juice isn't worth the squeeze, guys. What we'd get back
isn't great.
Wouldn't help us enough.
Which I get.
I think it helps the sellers a lot more. Like when Washington traded Chase Young and Montez Sweat, no-brainer, absolutely do that. As a buyer in the NFL, it's not always the case. And because of that, it's just harder to get value. It's airport shopping. I needed headphones the other day when I was on my way out to cover the Brewers and the NLCS, and I spent $60 on headphones that would have been like $14 somewhere else, and I knew it when I was, but I forgot my
earpiece. You're right there. They got you. Yeah.
You know, I
got
to do what I got to do. Did you hear Dan Quinn's presser today?
I did.
So Quinn spoke with the media this afternoon. The press conference started with his opening remarks, and then the first question was from John Keim, and he was following up because Quinn hasn't spoken since Monday on a Zoom, and on Monday wasn't really going to get into the strategy of the week or anything. But he was so angry after the game, if you remember, that he had suggested the possibilities that everything was on the table, that they could make changes. I mean, he was being asked, are you going to help take over play calling duties from Joe Witt? Are you going to bench anybody? It was that kind of game in Dallas. It was that bad. And so he said, everything's on the table. I'm paraphrasing. Obviously, he wasn't going to have Joe Witt give up play calling duties, but you thought maybe they'll use this safety more or that corner doesn't play as much. And when he was asked today about what they're changing, he said that they're going to change the fact that they're going to improve their play. That was his answer.
That's the big adjustment.
Let's let you hear the audio.
You said you're going to look at everything on defense. Will we see any changes on defense?
I think what you'll see is improved play. I think that's, you know, obvious that we want to dig in. So when we wanted to look and assess to where we needed to make change and make adjustments, sometimes they're not these big overhauls, John, that go that make the major improvement. It's these small calibrations and adjustments. And so that is definitely underway. You know, as we get out of practice today, I'm looking forward to seeing the speed. We're trying to eliminate the hesitation, and we will do that.
So cynically, you could listen to that and you could hear, hey, what changes are you going to make? And Dan Quinn says, we won't be making any changes. I believe in his mind, he answered that question by saying, oh, we've made a change. We're not going to play like that anymore. And he really believes and thinks that the way that they played against the Cowboys was the problem. And if we turn up the fader on intensity and physicality and tackling and all these things we didn't do well enough, we're going to be just fine. So I didn't enjoy that answer as someone who just wants blood, who wants you know, a pound of flesh. I want to hear that. You know what we're going to do is we've made a couple tweaks in the secondary, you guys will notice, and we're going to get a couple guys that are hungry, more playing time, or something like that. So you didn't hear what you want, so you're not going to love it. But don't you think that he really believes they did make a change? The change is we corrected some things where we weren't controlling the controllables.
Yeah, that is the non-cynical adult interpretation of that, where you're able to put emotion aside. I find that answer infuriating. I found that answer infuriating.
Well, the fan in me does too, because you're asked, what changes are you making? And you said, we're going to change how we play.
We'll do the improved play move.
We're going to play better. That's our change.
What a great, brilliant change. Stroke of genius. You know, you could, if you would waited until now to apply that, you could have applied that weeks ago. Can you imagine how much different the world would be if you just done the do better thing?
Done that after the Packers game. You should have made the change of playing better.
Can you imagine if you've done that before the Chicago game? Oh, my God, wins. So I understand the point. He's not revealing anything. He's not going to run anybody under the bus. That's why he's beloved. I get that. When I want, I think you said it right. When I want my pound of flesh, and I want it so badly, I want you to tell me the thing that I see that everybody knows, that fill in the blank sucks and can't do it. We're going to make a change there. Or some acknowledgement other than course correction, play better, details. I've heard that. I've heard that 1,000 times. I don't want to hear it anymore. I actually either want the thing to happen, which I don't believe it will, or give me something. I'm sitting there starving with my knife and fork and a bib around my neck. Give me that steak. Hand it to me right there on the platter, and he won't. And I get it.
There's a point where you don't have the option anymore.
Right.
To just continue to say, well, we're just going to play better. Like, eventually there's going to be a point, he doesn't think they're there yet, where you have to do something just to do it. You got to try something just to try it. And if nothing else, you're literally, as you said, just kind of throwing meat into the lion's den just to give people something to back off a little bit. And that's the media is the conduit from the fan base or whatever. But in his mind, they are not there at this juncture. At 3 o'clock in 20 minutes, the details on this 11-state, 30-arrest storyline out of the NBA coaches and players, rigged poker playing, absolutely staggering. We're going to dive knee-deep into it and try to get some details from Dan Lust. You're listening to Grant and Danny on The Fan.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5.
I know where I'm going to bet from now on.
Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Hey, it's your favorite sports talk show in the DMV, the Sports Junkies.
We're talking DC sports and having fun, chopping it up every day on the radio.
You can hear us every morning on 106.7 The Fan.
But did you know our show is also a podcast?
You can get every episode, every hour, and every single highlight on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
And whenever works for you.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search the Sports Junkies, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Rebound tipped by Sarr and brought up by George. George ahead now to Whitmore. Foul line. Right corner, Trey Johnson for three. It's there. And the rookie knew it when he released it. Nice. Act like you've done it before.
Nice, nice pass by Cam, too. Got rid of it nice and early.
As heard on 106.7 The Fan last night, the Wizards in their season opener. They lose last evening 133-120 to the Milwaukee Bucks. Milwaukee's going to beat a lot of teams this year. They are really, really good. And in fairness, the Wizards are going to lose to a lot of teams this year. They are the opposite of really, really good. Having said that, though, last night went about it like I wanted to, Danny.
Yep.
They were competitive as the game went on. They kind of took some punches and jabbed back, and they hung, and they got a cover in the basketball game as well last night, if you're into that kind of thing. But most importantly, my sweet Prince Trey Johnson looked like a baller. It's so weird when you draft a guy who is a lethal shooter, who has offensive game and can put the ball in the basket, how the pick's going to work out. They've done the opposite of that for a long, long time around here. Trey Johnson, 5 of 11 from the floor, shot 50%, 4 of 8 from deep, hit both of his free throws, 16 points for him last evening. He was a minus 8 on a night where the Wizards were a minus 13.
It is so early, and this is so premature. They got one, dude.
I agree.
They got one. He's got work to do. He's going to have to get a lot stronger for both ends of the court, I think.
Turn the ball over
yes.
like three times before he scored in the early minutes of his outing.
Yeah.
He kind of looked like he was drinking out of a fire hose a little bit at times.
There's an effortlessness to it where he's so smooth. He's going to get the looks he wants, but that's going to come from getting a little bit stronger. That's just time. That's just, you know, going up against grown men day after day after day after day, etc. Just quick note, though. You mentioned Alex Sarr. I feel terrible for him. Like, Giannis is going to do that to everybody. You win two MVPs by playing bully ball, and he got bullied last night. I hope that doesn't get him down too much, because I saw some intriguing stuff with him as well.
Double-double last night as well. I mean, it's not all bad. He was a minus six, better than the roster. 10 points, 11 rebounds for him, double-double with three assists. My thing on Sarr is just, he is clearly impactful around the rim defensively. I just don't see a path to him ever being very good offensively. And so if it's putbacks and dunks and stuff right around the rim, cool. But I don't know what the ceiling is there. Like, there's no stardom there for me.
I'm intrigued. So you're right. I'm not going to run 20 plays a night for him. But I saw some footwork down in the post that I didn't see last year.
He's an athlete.
Right? Some of those up and under. Some of those, like, again, we're not talking Hakeem Olajuwon. That's once in a millennium. But, like, those sorts of activities where you draw someone one way, use your pivot foot, your drop step, you're up and under. I was pretty impressed with some of those things that he didn't have last year. Last year it was drift around 25 feet from the rim, maybe hit a pull-up, but mostly chuck threes and, you know, get something in transition. That, to me, was growth. Again, I'm with you. I don't know what the ceiling is, but I'm intrigued to find out. Seven-foot athletes like that, you'll keep getting chances for me.
Their best player last night was Keshawn George, who had 21 points with 9 rebounds and 4 assists. I thought he was impactful on both ends of the floor. So if you're just watching and monitoring the kids, there was a lot to like. They lose pretty decisively.
Yep.
But if you got a top 8 protected pick, you got to keep that pick. And so that's not the end of the world to lose last night either. You're going to get one more year like this. I was actually texting with somebody last evening who's part of a team in town on another sport. And they're like, what's the deal on the Wizards this year? And I was like, well, how much time you got?
Yeah, how much time you got, buddy?
They're like, well, are they going to be any better or what? And I'm like, I don't think they necessarily want to be that much better. They want their young players to develop. They want to be in a place where when they have the money to spend this offseason and the deepest draft we've seen in years and years and years, they're loaded with all the assets they can possibly get to maneuver that draft board. And next year's the year they make a big leap. Not this year. It's just not happening.
Right.
No, nor should it, honestly.
Yeah, they're not in a position to.
They're doing exactly what they should do. But Trey Johnson is worth tuning in for, I would say.
They got one. And I need it to. I understand they got a rotation and they're doing certain things and they love to do this dangle the carrot of minutes, etc. It just drove me crazy. Back-to-back threes. One in rhythm off a great pass by Cam Whitmore. Another, a little shot fake, step to the side. It looked smooth. It looked Ray Allen-esque, if I can say that. And then he immediately sits down. I understand there's a rotation, but I'm just sitting there waiting. I'm looking at my watch. I'm doing that thing. When is he back? When is he back? When is he back? Give me my drug. I need it. I just need him on the court.
The kids were a little surprised last night. Because normally, each morning, what my little guy asks me is, are we watching football or baseball tonight? Is it a football night or a baseball night? Well, recently I had to tell him, we're back to hockey, bud. He's like, oh, it's a hockey night. Well, last night he was really, really surprised.
He's thrown.
He didn't know what to do with himself when I told him it was a basketball night. Fear not, it is a football night tonight. Once more, young man, in the Paulson household, the Vikings and the Chargers kicking off week 8, Thursday night football. Minnesota's on the road taking on L.A. Do we have an update on Joe Alt? I heard he might go in this game. That would be weird to me on a Thursday short week. But he's getting much closer and apparently has been back on the practice field, at least in some level. I think the Vikings need this game more than the Chargers do. If you're L.A., you're worried about the AFC West because the Chiefs are all the way back and they look insurmountable again. But the Vikings in a loaded NFC North are 3-3. They have let these games slip away. They could have beat Philly. They didn't. They should have beat the Steelers. They didn't. The one game they played really, really crappy in was the Falcons game in week two. That was when J.J. McCarthy couldn't get out of his own way.
Yep.
So now Carson Wentz has started the last four. But you've got the Lions, a Ravens team with Lamar coming back, and then a division game against the Bears and Packers all coming up before the Seahawks. You think Washington's got a tough schedule. They got a murderer's row looming. They have to beat the Chargers tonight, in my opinion, or else, similar to Washington, they're going to be on radio in Minneapolis next week where they're trying to find wins and say, this doesn't look good in the wild card picture, because they're 1-2 in the NFC as well.
I've been confused by their defense, because this is a group with Brian Flores and company that has had incredible moments. Like, there are times where they are a juggernaut. They're a buzzsaw. They're blitzing you 6 ways from Sunday. It's like, you know, kind of old school Todd Bowles a little bit getting after you, but everything's creative and they fly around and they can stuff you. And then there are other times where you go, do you guys know that this is important? Like, are you gonna stop somebody? It's inconsistency for
They're
me
top
with that
10
defense
in the league.
Overall, they are, yeah, in terms of points allowed, in terms of nearly any metric. But there's been, I mean, as you watch them, you're going, Philadelphia is an A. If they score, you lose. Gotta have a drive. Philly walks down the field.
So I guess I agree with you in the Philly game. It wasn't very good, but I wouldn't have said that about the whole season, would you? I mean, but
I'm saying there are moments. Like, yeah. I look at that week one against Chicago. Week one's weird. That's fine. But the Steelers early in that game did what they wanted a couple times, then held on for dear life in a very Steelers fashion.
I'll bet you they crush Justin Herbert tonight. They're third in sacks per pass attempt.
Feels like they will.
Flores dials it up. I don't know if they win the game, but I would be really surprised if Herbert isn't hit early and often in this football game. We'll make our predictions before we get out of here at the end of the show. But next, let's dive into this really enthralling story where 11 states were involved, 30 arrests have been made. The FBI was raiding homes today, players and coaches in the NBA. Dan Lust covers sports law, joins us as soon as we return on Grant and Danny.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5.
I know where I'm going to bet from now on.
Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Hey, it's your favorite sports talk show in the DMV, the Sports Junkies.
We're talking DC sports and having fun, chopping it up every day on the radio.
You can hear us every morning on 106.7 The Fan.
But did you know our show is also a podcast?
You can get every episode, every hour, and every single highlight on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
And whenever works for you.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search the Sports Junkies, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.